I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Joining me this Monday morning are Jeff Kenny and Tim Lynch. I don't know if you're sick of hearing them from them yet, but you're probably going to get sick of hearing from them because I've got a lot of comments over the weekend about the kind of way that we kind of roundtable these issues. And so it's the issue that everybody in the country is talking about now. And so anyway, I wanted to have them both back on to update this story, and in particular, you know, what's going to pulling the issue apart and then looking at it again from three sides, and then, you know, at the end of this, we'll kind of fire in our own opinions. But so joining me this morning from Southern California is Jeff Kenny. Jeff, how you doing?
Good, Mac. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. And from Texas, Tim Lynch. Tim, how are you?
Yeah, just fine, Mac. Thanks for having me back on.
You bet. So let's talk about before we kind of do analysis, anything over the weekend that happened that has caught your eye? Jeff, start with you.
Yes, the Iranian parliament or the Iraqi parliament voted to expel the United States 5,000 or so troops we have from Iraq, which was kind of expected.
Okay, so when we'll talk about, do we actually think that's going to happen? Right. And so Jeff and I talked about this, that was the expected, right, public, you know, call that would happen. But as the Iraqis often taught me, what gets said and then what's ultimately done are two separate things. So we'll talk about that. Tim, anything that you saw over the weekend that caught your eye?
Yeah, sure did. Article from Reuters coming out 2 days ago, right, that reported it was the title of the article is "Inside the Plot by Iran's Soleimani to Attack U.S. Forces in Iraq," and it details an October meeting that was right across the river from the embassy. It's rather startling. It says in Reuters, it's by the staff, sourcing Iraqi and U.S. Commanders and sources, what have you. But it was a very, very detailed description of exactly what was said in October. The subsequent flow of rockets that were used to attack American bases later in that month, and the guy that he was talking to was the other guy that we killed at the airport. So that to me indicates that we have a level of intelligence about these Iranian-backed militias that is rather comprehensive.
Got it. And where did you see that story, and what's the title of it, and who wrote it?
It's Reuters. It says Reuters staff. It sounds like it was done by Iraqi stringers. It's World News, January 3rd. It was published at 6:56 p.m. "Inside the Plot by Iran's Soleimani to Attack U.S. Forces in Iraq," and it's detailed. It reads like an intelligence report.
I'll tell you what. Would you send that link to me, and then I'll include that with the post.
I'm doing it right now.
Got it.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, I was traveling yesterday, and I've been doing post-traumatic winning stuff all day. I'm here in Cherry Point, North Carolina. Never been to the Marine Corps Air Station Cherry Point. And so I've been kind of in the post-traumatic winning cone of silence. But you know, as always, I take a look at the news. And one of the things that makes me shake my head as I look at the news is the stuff that you read Americans say from both sides of the aisle, you know, and to me, it's like, okay, well, what do you want the country to do? And I'll start with a point of history. We've learned over and over again in history that when you try to placate democracies, I'm sorry, when you try to placate totalitarian governments, it doesn't work. And we're seeing, hopefully, some sort of economic movement out of China. Why? Because, you know, President Trump has taken a pretty hard line relative to relative to the way China does business. And I mean, and it's just plain on the... It's as plain as I thought I was.
Jesus coming.
I thought I was going to heaven there for a second. The
I thought we were waiting for the virgins to come. Wow.
First of all, they would be nowhere near you, my friend. So yeah, that was totally elevator going down music. But and the same thing with Iran. You know, President Obama tried to play nice with them. And the only thing that people that you get is, you know, you're duped once again. Damn it, they did it again. And so then if you follow just, I mean, events, you don't even have to go back any further than 18 months. Mining of the Persian Gulf, right? Oh, the international shipping hits, right? Hijacking ships. Then the downing of a drone. None of it responded to by the international community or by the United States. And then the rocketing of Saudi Arabia's oil production refineries, right, to the tune of 50% of their capacity.
Right.
And nothing done about that. How many times do you give a country the other cheek before you have to say enough? And the next question, historically, and I was thinking about this yesterday while I was flying, is what are we afraid of? You know,
exactly.
we've been doing this dance with Saudi Arabia since the late 70s. And what are we afraid of? It's not like it's a contest if we confront them militarily. The only way we could screw it up is if we actually, you know, tried to do nation building, which we can't do. But as long as we were in the destruction of their military, and specifically the IRGC, right? You know, I mean, what are we afraid of? I mean, it's not like it's going to be a fair fight, no matter how they bloviate. And so those are as I was sitting and I watched so many idiots bloviate on this topic, and I swear to God, I don't think they know anything about the Middle East. And then somebody sent me a link that Tom Friedman.
Yeah,
who I think we all, whether we always agree with him or not, Tom Friedman, pretty informed dude. He told me, and it was Bob Nielsen that sent it to me. And I'll include his column in this post as well. And he said essentially Friedman would agree with you and Jeff in your talking points last week. Yeah. And I said, really? Well, that makes me feel good because Friedman, he's a smart dude. And Bob said, yeah. He said that's why I enjoyed, you know, your discussion so much. So anyway. With all that said, we'll go around one more time. Jeff, any comments about what Tim said or what I said?
I agree with that, what Nielsen was saying, as far as like when you were saying, what are we so afraid of? The other guys should be afraid. The Iranians should be afraid. All those provocations and nothing really done. And then when President Trump, he said, if you hurt an American, they're going to pay. And so he strikes at the guy who gives the orders, not just some grunt, you know, in some Shia militia group, FOB, you know, going to the head or going to chow, he gets whacked by us. No, it's the guy who actually gives the order. He's striking right for Don Corleone, you know.
Right. No. And, you know, and again, Jeff, you and I talked about that last week, about how successful Iran has been, right, with doing nefarious things, and then we'll go whack a proxy. And again, the United States needs to stop doing that. If it comes from Iran, Iran should pay, and that's what Iran doesn't want, because Iran can't stand that. So no.
And this isn't like now that we broke it, we got to fix it.
No.
This is just sheer. Hey, you hit one of ours, we'll hit you harder.
And let me tell you, you know, if we broke that thing. Right. And if they did have regime change, you know, let me tell you, the Iranian people, they'd fix that shit in no time. Trust me. Right. I mean, they're a developed country. I mean, they're a developed culture. You know, they might need some aid, and I mean, which the world would jump at the opportunity to do. But
a large successful diaspora across the world too.
Oh my God! Right? Yeah,
very successful.
Hold on. Let me, Jeff. Any other comments about what Tim said or what I said?
The Reuters article is informative. You know, I'm kind of going through this. You know, all these talking heads and have the same reaction you do, Mike, Mac, because there's just so much taking counsel of your fears. You know, that's what they do. They're like, they think that these folks that we're against, they can strike anywhere. They're all powerful. Oh my God! But the truth is, both Al Qaeda and the Iranians, like, you know, characterized by Hezbollah, and then this guy, Soleimani, when they strike at innocents. They couldn't pull off a Pearl Harbor like the Japanese could. They couldn't, you know, they couldn't encircle and cut off Khe Sanh like the North Vietnamese did. They realize that. Their thing is all about murder of innocents. And when we stick up to them and we make the guilty pay for the murder of innocents, that sends home a hard message. I don't think we should discount that. We shouldn't think our enemy so much more powerful than he really is.
No, and we make him more powerful by playing that stupid game with him, you know. Yeah. And so, all right, Timmy, your thoughts on either what Jeff or I said.
The first thing I want to do is go back in time with a specific individual to the Beirut bombing. Not just that, but the kidnapping of the CIA station chief.
Right.
And they kept that son. They kept Buckley was his name. They kept him alive for a year, torturing him. And at the same time they grabbed him, they grabbed the Russian, a Soviet diplomat. And the KGB came in and grabbed some random Lebanese that were connected to Hezbollah and started killing them. And they let the Soviet go in a day. And I've never forgotten that lesson because at the strategic level, we have sucked since – I mean – and we talked about this during that long time we were talking about Vietnam, Mac. We were going through the special, and I mentioned the fact that the Johnson administration told the Swedish delegation in the Swedes in D.C. what the target list was going to be the following day, and they would tell the North Vietnamese, Johnson thinking that they would move people out of the way because that's what he'd do. And the North Vietnamese would throw more people in there and all their anti-aircraft guns. And, I mean, that's been our strategic performance. It's been at that level until now.
Now a mirror image the wrong way.
Yeah, and now I sense a strategic campaign using all the levers to include military, to include diplomatic, to include the sanctions. I'm sensing a strategic campaign that works. And it's weird because it's almost to the point where you've got to take President Trump and tie his hands and feet together and throw him in water to see if he floats. Because it's magic what the hell he's doing right here, right?
Yeah, I don't know if I think that's a reach. I think you're like
– I just how I feel. I'm so happy. I'm happy.
I know.
2020 is going to be a
great
year.
Let's stay away from the Trump derangement syndrome for a minute. because I don't think Trump draws strategy. Strategy requires discipline and long-term planning, and that's never been his strong suit. Donald Trump does is he goes out every day and fights you in the street. That's what he does every day. Strategy is never – I mean, you know, the thing he's done with China has been, in my opinion, the most farsighted, the thing he stuck with the longest and the most. And we'll see how that goes now that, you know, the election is looming and if we back off that to make a deal in time for the election or whatnot. But anyway, I don't want to get sidetracked with that. Let me comment on things you said. One, the thing that Jeff talked about, you know, I think is significant about the counsel of your fears. And again, we are at our best when we're destroying stuff. We can do that like nobody. And sometimes I don't think the people in this country, you know, they act like they're terrified of Iran or somehow or other. And this was the other thing that drove me crazy. Somehow or other, we've escalated this. They killed an American, right? And the United States, we just digest it like that's no big fucking deal. That used to be a big deal. When Americans died, shit rolled downhill. And so to me, that's been amazing to listen to that we've escalated this. Wait a minute, man. Do you all not read the news? Do you all not read what's going on? And the thing when I was listening to Timmy talk, the thing that about the Reuters article, I think, do you remember when the Mossad yoked up all that stuff out of Tehran and Netanyahu went on stage with all that shit and he started dropping curtains and showing DVDs and putting people's faces up and their text messages and all that shit. I think, you know, if we have that stuff, right, and obviously, you know, not revealing sources and methods and all that stuff that you got to do, we ought to show people, you know, this is what the president responded to. And because I think, you know, it's like you're watching, you know, Netanyahu at that press conference, and he just throws the Iranians like their shit right in the street. Here it is. Now, what, anybody got anything to say? When Israel goes, right, you know that they're conducting this program under this cloak of secrecy for very specific reasons, which they articulate in these letters. And so, to me, if the president has that, then I would like to see him in some way, shape, or form disclose that. And I think ultimately they will. But it's been an interesting weekend.
Can I add something?
Sure.
To that? I think the cause and effect. I think the people are getting that reversed. This guy Soleimani has been for 10 years spreading disorder and fighting and violence across the region. The result of his efforts was that attack. He brought that on himself. Somebody is fundamentally confusing the cause and effect here. For 10 years, that guy's been running rampant, and they've always assumed that they were invulnerable because we've always treated them with kids' gloves, even after they kidnapped and tortured our CIA station chief. And that's a big deal. I mean, that's a big deal. It should not be unpunished. So I can't believe this. Oh, we're fueling aggression. We're stopping the aggression by killing this guy. Yeah. Clearly, I mean, that's not even debatable.
Well, again, it's how do you do deterrence? By absorbing their blows, or do you haul off and do a version of Mike Tyson hitting, who was it, Leon Spinks, where he almost ripped his head off?
I mean, any one of 50 guys.
But I remember seeing. Yeah. I think that was the first.
Yeah, Michael Spinks, 90 seconds.
Oh my God! I mean, it was like stop! Somebody stop this! He's going to knock his head like it's going to be like something in cartoons. It's going to go rolling down the street in New York City, for God's sakes, you know. And but if you don't unleash that right, to let them know, look, just so you know, in case you forgot, I'll do this.
Right.
And I think because you know I said this to Jeff on Thursday. On Friday, this is something the Israelis would do. Yeah. They would take out one of their foes with impunity, and not apologize for it. This is not something the United States has gotten such, in my opinion, and we've enabled these guys. We've enabled these guys, and like, you know, so what, you know, what are we afraid? What are we afraid of when it comes to Iran? Or what Iran can't have, what risks the farm. Is Iran cannot have us, Iran, and I want to us. We're all going to become Iranian here in a second, and members of the IRGC or some high level official that's in those small group meetings. So here in a second, we're going to talk about their perspective. But what they can't have is they can't give us some kind of premise to destroy, you know, most of their navy and much of their IRGC, because that risks the whole franchise. That now you are talking about regime change, and so in a time when the Iranians are vulnerable, so that's
the new war,
right? So let's talk about that. So if we all become Iranians and we're looking at this, Jeff, give me your perspective on it. If you're looking to strike America, understanding that you've got to protect the homeland and you got to keep that shored up. You understand what America, you understand, and as you said, that, you know, their greatest strengths are the ability to do asymmetrical warfare. And yet, you know, you've got to respond in a public way because the whole Middle East is watching. You've talked shit for decades about the great Satan and you're not afraid and all this bullshit. And now the great Satan punched you right in the face. And so what are you going to do? And you're so, I mean, that's a relatively pretty delicate high wire act. Your thoughts on it?
Well, first, I think this. Every country's government, no matter what kind of government it is, whether it's totalitarian, parliamentary, or like a republic like we have, the biggest pain in the ass for the people who run things are the population they're supposed to be working for. And because they can get you, they can throw you out of power. I don't care if you're China, Soviet Union, Iran, whatever, it can happen. So consequently, what they're facing right now because of the economic relatability of the nations, countries and stuff, these sanctions are really hurting them. But yet their big thing is when these Muslim fundamentalists came in was, we're not going to do like the Shah did. You guys are not going to be able to take advantage of all the stuff that you're seeing now in the Western democracies. Now that you have an open, semi-open society, when they took over, they couldn't reclose the society, and so they had to. They immediately plunged them into a vicious World War I like scenario with Iraq, even though Iraq invaded them, and that is their background. That is their history. Constant conflict, and I think, because of the internet, because of the able to access information from relatively unbiased sources, there's a huge part of the Iranian people aren't buying it anymore. And so consequently, these guys have to have successes. They have to have successes. They have to keep them focused on some mythical enemy out there. And when we hit them hard in response to some injustice they do, like that attack on the base where they killed the American contractor and other things, like attacking the U.S. embassy, when they get hit back, as long as the message keeps coming, this can all go away. You guys can actually enjoy the largesse that the United States and Canada and Britain, you know, enjoy. All you got to do is not, you know, and there's a laundry list of things that you got to not do. And one of them is get rid of these guys who are using murder as an excuse to march you guys down this path. Their government, that form of Shia religion that they embrace is apocalyptic. They believe in the big ending thing. They're like the last chapter of the Bible. You know, that's my opinion of it.
All right. So, but here's what I want to do though is we're now Iranians, right? So, what would you do if you're the new head of the IRGC? It's going to be on your recommendation that probably the nation acts. What would you do to recommend, you know, that the nation does to service these objectives, which are: one, we have to do something lest we look weak; two, we cannot give the Americans, we can't do too much to the Americans because we don't know what Trump will do. He has not showed the restraint that others have. And if he decides to unleash their military might against us, right, we can lose the whole thing.
So what would I do if I was an Iranian looking at it from their point of view?
Exactly.
All right. I would, number one, I'd try and kill Americans in places that are off the main three-ring circus here. So I'm talking about South America, Africa, maybe even the Far East. Murder of Americans, maybe an attack of embassy, and then but they want to have some kind of deniability so that they can milk the natural sympathy of like opposing party in the United States and countries that aren't very happy with Trump in Europe. And also I think they may try and grab a whole diplomatic mission in somewhere and hold them hostage.
Okay, so let me ask you this. So we're OPT in this as the Iranian War Council and with their prime minister, the president of Iran. So whatever we do, will it be connected to us? Because in Africa today, one American service member, two contractors were killed in Kenya.
Kenya, right?
I mean, so will we use our proxies and say, look, we the nation of Iran hasn't done anything. right? You murdered one of our guys, but are you, you've angered our proxies, but that's not us. Is that the tack we're going to take? Because, you know, because again, I'm concerned about what Donald Trump will do.
Yeah, they're going to try murder that they can deny, but then kidnapping that they will take credit for, because they'll say whoever it is they're taking has committed crimes. And then it'll be, in order to get this guy back, it'll be more like, it'll be kind of like a, they think their great victory is the 444 days in 1979, 1980, right, when they had the embassy employees hostage. That's a big, that's their golden time.
Got it. Got it. All right. Timmy, you're in this OPT. What's your recommendation?
Well, if the new head of the Revolutionary Guard is a really smart but lazy guy.
No, we're not doing that.
Oh, okay.
You're the head. What is your recommendation for the nation? Because to service to, one, we have to retain our hold on our nation. So we can't get the Republican Guards and much of our military power whacked. Two, we have to respond in some way so we don't look weak. And we're already struggling through the Middle East right now in the last few months. So,
well,
what's your recommendation on what we should do?
We invite John Kerry back. He was there a year ago trying to help them through the sanctions for their nuclear program. It sent an emergency message to ask John Kerry and tell him to bring James Taylor, too, like he did it to France after they had their terrorist attack, and then put them both in orange jumpsuits. Boom. There you go. There's your hostages. And you can sit there and say they're criminals, that they lied to them, that they set them up. They're spies. That would be a good move, because what Iran needs to do is concentrate on Iraq. They've got to win. Their side's got to win in Iraq, or their dreams are
regional hegemony. Okay, hold on. Let me bring you back. So seriously, what would you recommend? You know, and I don't think bringing John Kerry back is a bad idea. It's let's fold the Americans against themselves. Let's get John Kerry or somebody to come here and you know, say in front of God and everybody, if he would, you know, that you know, Donald Trump is whatever he is, and divide the Americans, use the media to do that. What's your recommendation, though, you know, to this OPT about what we should do?
My recommendation would be to do that, to invite John Kerry back or anybody else we could get, maybe even Pelosi, to plead our case to them that we're being abused, our people are starving, blah, blah, blah. While at the same time, they have got to win in Iraq. They cannot let the Iraqis kick their asses out of it.
No, stop. Wait. You're doing commentary. Okay.
I need
recommendations.
Recommendation one, bring back American politicians to plead our case that are on our side in this deal. I believe they probably have contributed money to them, but who knows? They may not have to. That would be recommendation one. Recommendation two, reinforce our efforts in Iraq. Our militias have got to win there or we're done. Because none of this shit's fooling the population. They've got a time bomb they're racing against, and they've got to establish some kind of credibility mighty quickly and get those sanctions lifted, or they're toast. They're toast.
Jimmy's talking about shoot in the half in wrestling. Yeah. Shoot in the half.
So what do you talk when you say win in Iraq? What do you mean? So I'm looking for courses of action. Okay, not once over the world.
When Soleimani was over there, and he wasn't just in Iraq, he's in Syria and Lebanon too. But of course, he's got militias that they've been financing and paid for. These militias are, as Jeff has pointed out, all over the place, all over the country.
Yeah. Right.
The Shia clerical leaders in Iraq are not down with them. To include Mataq el-Sadr, who said he's released a statement saying he hopes that Iraq is not involved in any of the fallout after this assassination. Al-Sistani, the Grand Ayatollah, he is absolutely adamant that the Persians need to get out of his country and it needs to be settled. They need to have their country back. So they're racing against time in Iraq. They've got a significant percent of the population on their side because they're paying them. They've provided employment.
Okay, so again, what's the course of action?
That's reinforcing are proxies in Iraq and winning in Iraq. Meaning that we force the Iraqi government to start taking actions against the Americans, which they do not seem inclined to do, with the exception of their Shia parliament. But who gives a shit about them?
Yeah.
Okay, so because I'm the president of Iran in this little OPT, I look at both of you and say, that's all. We're limited to that. We're limited to that. And mm-hmm. when I look at you and say that, what do you all say to me?
What do you expect us to do? We close the Straits of Hormuz.
Yeah,
you close the Straits of Hormuz, and China starts bitching. I mean, it's America is no longer vulnerable.
Can't take any stronger measures directly against the United States. Yeah. Jeff,
maybe
I don't think so, because right now this strike against this guy was so high up, such a decapitatory strike. Anything is possible for the United States, to include nuclear weapons. So right now they can't launch like a mass murder attack that's tied directly to them without having massive retaliation. And that type of retaliation will bring their downfall, because the people won't stand for it. They won't stand for this after all this baloney talk, especially with all the real information, or at least contradictory information, that comes in over the internet, and, you know, television, satellites, and so forth.
So our hands are tied relative to anything that ties us in a heavy-handed way to any death of American or anything that gets destroyed.
Yeah, we have to use the asymmetric approach like we are so good at, because to face us, to cause America to see us as a surface threat like they did the Japanese, will lead to destruction at the levels that would maybe shake our lead to regime change from our own people.
Okay, let me ask you one more. What about, you know, our greatest moment were those 441 days, 440. Are there targets that we can kidnap, bring here to Iran?
Yes.
Hold in a very public way, but treat them very well. That we could, you know, get to speak out against the Americans. Is that a possibility?
Mac, that's the huge vulnerability within Iraq right now.
But it's been addressed. It's been addressed.
They might be able to pull it off.
Okay,
maybe not with 52, but with 12 or 13 for sure.
Got it. Okay, so as we look at this, what we would do in a very public way, and my next question is going to be about, should we go to the UN about the martyring of a top government official, the murder of a top government official, and in a very public way, act like we're being reasonable and ask the United Nations to take action against the United States. But I'm not there yet. So kidnapping prominent Americans, bringing them to Iran, treating them fabulously well, allowing them to communicate, and that would be a course of action that, you know, we could possibly pull off. And it'd be very visible. It would make us look strong. Yet at the same time, we would not harm anybody other than keeping them here.
Yeah. Another thing is, turn to Afghanistan if you want to grab somebody who's not ready.
Right.
That's exactly right.
Okay, Timmy, your any thoughts on this tightrope that we're going to walk relative to pissing off the United States, because we can't predict, you know, with any sense of surety what the President of the United States will do in the future if he's tweaked?
One of the things that's interesting is they're a powerful country. They have the capability, I'm sure, to launch a Mumbai-style attack through proxies here. Suppose they did it through just a makeup one, a Mexican-American gang proxy. What good would it do? Nobody would – it was never connected to them. What good would it do? It does them no good, because people just think these Mexican-American – you know, this gang just went crazy. So they've got to send a message.
I would say this as the president of Iran. If as I read Donald Trump, he's already threatened that he has 52 targets. So somebody who's never attacked the United States all of a sudden attacks the United States, and he's not going to link that to us.
Yeah, no. What I'm saying is if it's not linked to you, what the hell good was it as far as meeting your strategic objectives? They've got to have a win.
You know, Timmy, Timmy's idea about going to John Kerry, that's very interesting to me.
Well, I think that's where you
I seriously would.
Yeah, no, that's why Timmy was. I don't know if he was serious about that or not, but that's to me, you know, being able to use Jane Fonda again, we can call her up and say, "Hey, will you come?" You know, we can call whoever we can call and say, "Will you come to Iran?" And sit on our anti-aircraft rockets and so we can take pictures and badmouth your own country. That is certainly the same thing with going to the UN as a charade. But what would happen at the UN? Would we have assurances from China? You know, the United States obviously would veto anything, but do we have assurance from China and Russia that they would help us, you know, articulate this to the world that the United States is out of control and Trump is a madman?
I think Trump would. That's one, as a loyal Iranian Shia nut job, their Ayatollah Mac, I would tell you, I think that the president of the United States would relish a chance to tell the UN to go take a flying screw at a rolling donut, and the Russians and Chinese along with them.
Well, and so let me put on my director of IRGC intelligence, sir. Gives me no great pleasure to inform you of this, but I believe we've had a couple of our sources who we've trusted, had ultimate trust in, have been turned because they are now missing, and their entire families are missing. And they were last seen buying clothes at Gucci's in New York City. And so we believe that the Americans have our communications relative to our operation, you know, Golden Goose, that we were about to conduct. If we go to the UN and they throw that out there, there's a good chance they'll probably throw pieces of it out there. But if they throw more of it out there, it will cause a serious, significant embarrassment. And we can, we can obviously
operation.
Say that.
Well,
Operation Bodo Gumshoe. That means get the fuck out of here in Farsi.
No, the time to go to the UN would have been when the Trump administration designated the Revolutionary Guard as a terrorist organization. That's why we could kill General Soleimani. That's, so they go to the UN. The UN says, hey,
no, he's that dude, but that dude's a legitimate military target. I mean, and we know, right?
Oh, yeah.
We know because we medevaced them when we went to their memorial services. I mean, the stuff he was sending to Iran, getting in the country, the guys he sent to train, the orchestration of all that, that's all blood on his hands. And so I just hope he died a slow death. I hope, and it doesn't look like he did by what was left over of that car, but I hope that he didn't die in a big flash very quickly. I hope he bled out, right? I hope he screamed for his mother, right? Because that guy's a bad guy. And anybody who thinks that in some way, shape, or form, this guy wasn't a legitimate military target, just go the fuck away. Go read a couple of books, okay? Because you don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
You're talking about
a little bit further. I think the Iranian government has a more realistic view of their strength and weaknesses than the political party that's out of power right now in the United States does about theirs.
You know what, Jeff?
So I think going to John Kerry may look like a good idea from there. I think that our guys might be dumb enough over here to go along with them.
Right. Oh, no. No, without a doubt.
Absolutely.
Without a doubt. Timmy, any other – look, as a president of Iran right now, I mean, I'm, like, distressed because other than some PR stuff, it looks like we're going to look weak. And so if anything that happens – right? And Jeff, do your Vito Corleone. If anything happens to my son.
Yeah, that's right. If he should be shot in the head by a policeman or hang himself in his cell or is struck by a bolt of lightning, I'm going to hold some of the people in this UN responsible. And that I don't forgive.
Exactly. That's Vito Corleone, right? And if Donald Trump is got his Vito Vito Corleone shoes on, right? If he's putting the lemon, you know, the orange peels in his yeah. mouth, right out in the garden, then we're pretty hamstrung in terms of what we can do. But and so we have to reinforce somehow or other our militias, you know, that we've spent so much money on, because if we don't do that, you know, we're at risk of losing the franchise here that we worked so hard to create in Iraq and Syria and Lebanon.
Yeah, and they are weaker now than they were in 2015 when Obama dumped that money on them. Ever since then, what they've got is unrest.
Well, I just want to make sure that we footnote that when yeah. Obama tried to be friends with them, right? It's not like that was their money. Those were most of it was their assets that we unfroze. Now, I've read that says there was some other money in there where we paid to get people for hostages, right? I don't know that I could say that with truth, but it would not surprise me if that was the case. And so, anyway, go on, Tim. But that was money. It's not like the United States paid all that money to Iran. It was stuff that was Iranian assets that we had frozen, and President Obama unfroze those assets, right?
That's correct. They delivered it to him in cash on pallets. But since then, the regime in Iran has gotten consistently weaker. Their economic woes are hurting them. Mm-hmm. That money was injected into the Revolutionary Guard, not into projects for the people. I'm sure there were some, but obviously not enough.
Well, wait a minute. And let me just make one other point. What Soleimani was doing, right, was more of this, let's dust this thing up, right, because this economic thing is killing us. That's the whole point of the point of the point. That's what he was doing, is that we've got to create this, right? We've got to try to drive this wedge between Europe and the United States, get the United States out of Iraq, get them to be the great Satan, which rallies the troops at home, right? And that's what he was doing. That's what got him killed, ultimately.
And that Reuters article says that specifically, that he said, yeah, we definitely want to draw the United States to overreact here. That's what he's been trying to do for a while.
Okay. Now, so I, as the president, stand up. You know, I don't kiss you two, but I say goodbye to you, and I leave the room. Now, I want to teleport us all. Let's be Iraqi, in the Iraqi OPT, all right? And let's talk about the Iraqi perspective, you know, which, again, Sadr being as quiet as he's been has been really interesting, you know, and I mean, and their statements are very measured. So let's go in small group in Iraq from the Iraqi perspective, and let's talk about it at risk. So first of all of our political fortunes are at risk here, boys. If we send the Americans away, if we follow through on that, we lose their ISR, we lose their aviation assets, and that means the Sunnis are going to have free reign out west. And it will be a question of time before they ball up. Now, given the advanced state of our militias, it'll be a much better fight this time than it was last time when we depended on the Iraqi army. But nonetheless, if the American leaves, our civil war comes home soon, and the nation will be, you know, will be in, you know, immersed in violence again. So how do we play this thing with the Americans on one side who generate stability for us, right? And then the Iranians on the other side who desperately want to control us and use their militias. Jeff?
Well, I think that the Iranian people, to include, and maybe especially the Shia Iraqis, which are the majority, mostly resent the presence of Iranians in their country. And I think because the American presence is now so small, I mean, it's less than a regiment's worth of guys in there, really, when you think about it, less than a brigade. And they scattered all over the country. They think this is our last lifeline to our own self-determination. Once they're gone, we're just another province in Iran. We're a way station, so they can get to the Iranians. For some reason, believe that they need to hang on to Lebanon, Syria. Otherwise, their whole country is at risk. Don't ask me why, but that's what they seem to believe. and they become – so the Iraqis will probably do their weak-ass normal way of operating. We're gonna do this thing where we say we want you to leave, but really we don't. Wink, wink, nod, nod. And then try and just keep the status quo as long as possible.
Got it. I'm the president of Iraq again. I'm a powerful man in these OPTs, which I enjoy. There's nothing more we can do. Is there anything we can get the Americans to withdraw so that at least people think that we did something? What do we need to keep? And what can we get rid of to at least look like we're a strong country? And can we sustain ourselves if we don't do that? And then what will the Iranian response be? Jeff?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, I would say they don't give a shit about the Anbar province. That's the most of the Sunnis are there. But on the other hand, if they give over, they may say, we want your guys out of Anbar. And if that's the case, I mean, I'm really talking through my ass right now. Sorry to say. I mean, I don't think they would do that, you know, but you make a good suggestion. What can we take out and not really hurt us too bad? You know, I would say... it might be just a numbers thing. They say, you guys got to take 1,000 of your people out. Now, what will be a problem is if they say we want those grunts out to guard everything, that's going to be a no-go.
Right. So the security...
That feeds feeds back into the Iranian courses of action. You know?
Right. So, or would it be best if we gave them, told them that they will be out of the country in completely out of the country within 36 months to get the headline, and then we will back out of that? Would that be the better? And what do we do when the Iranians look at us and say, we know you're bullshitting? And then what will the Iranians do? Timmy, thoughts?
The Iraqis have got to shit or get off the pot. And I don't think that they're comfortable enough with Trump to start playing games about, well, you take out so many guys. I don't even think that they can get away with that. I don't think Trump will tolerate it. They have got to, their religious leadership, to include the Grand Ayatollah al-Sistani, are adamant that the Persian influence be reduced significantly in their country. They have got to, I believe, side with us, because whenever we're in there, even though it's less than a brigade, you know we come with all the goddamn money we're always spending doing stuff. How do you think those guys are making money off of us? You've got that too. I mean, and they're Arabs, and the Iranians are Persians, and that's a big goddamn deal. Because
That's huge.
Yeah, no, because we go around the world and we know. See, we know what racism really is.
Analysis with me again. I need courses of action from you.
Sorry. The course of action, Mr. President, please.
Thank you.
I don't think we should try to play games with President Trump. We need the Americans. Right now, we've got Shia militia that are being spun up by Iran to start doing shit to us right now. And we need to focus on them. That's what I would say.
So what you're suggesting to me is that the Shiite militias that we control, right, which are not the best trained in our country, we're going to stack those up against – we're betting the franchise. So the question is, if we tell the Americans to leave and we're serious about it, we all know that we're going to have a civil war.
Because
we won't be able to control we won't be able to control Anbar, and so the Sunni thing will get going again, and we will have our civil war.
They won't even be able to control Diyala or any of those other ones.
So if we once their aviation and ISR goes away, right? It's like put the blindfold on me, and we'll sit in here like we used to do, and try to figure out what the fuck's going on. If we don't do something with the Americans, then we will have a fight with the Iranian militia, and we don't know if we can win that.
Right. Mac, I'm your Iraqi advisor now. I'm the Iraqi broke dick I have a posture. This guy Trump may want us to ask him to leave so he can have an excuse to get out. So maybe we don't want to. We got to watch what we ask to take out. He might just leave. Then we're fucked.
That's absolutely possible. That's hysterical. Think of it. Think of it.
President Trump is the big unknown. One of the big unknowns of this thing.
So then I look at the room and say, "Oy vey, what do I do?" And then you guys go, "What the fuck did you just say?" Oh, did I?
Saying that. Otherwise, we got trouble right here in River City.
Did I let a little bit of Yiddish out? I'm sorry, boys. All right. So the Iraqis got problem. They don't have a good solution either. And you can see that they haven't. You know. So the question is, what goes beyond mere rhetoric and mere bloviating? Blah 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 blah, and the Iraqis are on the pervert, you know, in maneuver warfare we talk about being on the horns of a dilemma, right? Yeah. And so okay, Timmy, any other thoughts about the position Iraq is in?
Yeah, well they've sealed off the embassy with their army. They've also
that's been interesting. Right?
Moved the control and checkpoints in Baghdad with their army. So we'll see. I mean, the Shia militia are going to start popping off now. If they haven't before now, they're going to have to deal with those guys in some way, shape, or form anyway. I think if those guys are smart, they'll go with who's paying them. That's generally how things work out in that part of the world.
All right. Yeah. So in terms of we Iraqis, we will very publicly renounce what the United States did. We will condemn it. We will not give them an ultimatum to leave until after we back channel, you know, what we think we have to do to stay in power to the Americans. And if the president says okay, then we'll go ahead and execute that. So we'll pass an ultimatum, you know, saying that, you know, we want the United States out of here by 2025. Which will have no impact on President Trump, and then then we'll wink and tell him that we don't really mean this, but you know we're trying to keep calm in our country, which is a very real issue for us. You know, while we have these Iranian militias that are so powerful in our country, so let's talk about how do we rid ourselves of this Iranian influence. How do we do that?
The only way they got to do that is if we help them.
If we help, yeah. If we supply the Mahdi militia of Muqtada al-Sadr and allow him to rule the rule the day. I mean, his militia.
The way
was
they would do it is
right?
they give it to the Iraqi government and let them do with it what they will.
Right.
So it'll get wasted again and lost in corruption and embezzlement and everything else. I'm so cynical, man, when it comes to these guys.
No, well, I mean, that's the way they're cynics, and what they
do, earned it.
Right. What they do is they manage it. It's like, well, look, if we can get some more money, we'll take a slice of that, and then if the country goes to shit, then we're going to Switzerland anyway. So who gives a shit?
If you just give us more money, we'll let you help us save our government.
No, but that's the unknown with the Iranians too. Is I don't know the Iranian system that well, but I know the Afghans and Iraqis sort of well, and it's not like powerful generals mentor their outstanding subordinates. They more or less sidelines outstanding subordinates and view them as a threat. So we don't know how dysfunctional the Revolutionary Guard is in that sense. I sense it's got to be, having spent so much time in that part of the world and understanding the locals, I think, reasonably well. Because I guarantee you, it isn't everything's on the up and up like it is with us. I mean, they've got corruption. They've got to account for that. And it's got to be adding friction to how they're going to deal with us. And the only thing that I'm really afraid of is they do something completely bizarre. But If they kidnapped John Kerry, I'd be down with that.
As we were talking last week, it's what they've done best over the course of, you know, since of what I think it's like 43 years or something like
that. But they never paid. Never paid directly until we killed that son of a bitch.
Right.
So, I
agree with you, but it's been what they've been, you know, the bombing, you know, of our barracks in Beirut. I mean, all this was stuff that came, right? That sludgehammer came from, you know, what? They did what? You know, and same thing with taking of our, you know, of those hostages when it happened. It was like, what? They did what?
Yeah.
And so, again, it's what, you know, Jeff has repeatedly said. It's that, you know, they are, you know, their gift, you know, strategically is their ability to think outside the box. And so, I guess we wait.
But you can characterize all of that as provocation on top of provocation on top of provocation, which resulted in us whacking that son of a bitch. He earned that. That's a result of his provocations. We're not the ones. We're not provoking anybody.
Yeah, no, anybody who doesn't understand that. But again, I'll tell you what, the Vito Corleone statement, like, I don't believe in coincidences. Isn't that how he starts it, Jeff?
Yeah. He says, I'm a superstitious man. I'm a superstitious man. And if something happens, like, he goes through the whole thing about the hanging in the cell and the cop shooting him in the head.
Right.
And then the bolt of lightning, that comes from that.
I'm going to come looking for answers for some people here today.
Yeah.
Well. Right? And so, to me... that's what President Trump has said, is that I don't care what happens. I'm coming to Iran, right? I don't care if a Guamanian rattlesnake, right, scares the shit out of Melania, right? I don't care. I'm coming to you to pay. And so if that's where we're at, you know, and to me, I just, the people in the United States that think that you can negotiate with totalitarian governments and they will give you what they want. I mean, please just read a little history.
Yeah,
it is not the way. It's not the way. Okay, so let's be in the American OPT. What do we do next?
Okay, Mr. President, here's what I advise.
Who are you? Wait.
I advise.
Who are you right now? You want to be the National Security Advisor? You want to be the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, SecDef? Who do you want to be?
Sean Hannity. No, I'll be whoever this week the National Security Council guy.
Okay.
I say, look,
we don't even know his name.
Don't spend a lot of time worrying about where they're going to hit us. Spend a lot of time picking the next targets that they got, and I mean, your imagination is the limit. Our submarines can sink every fucking thing floating in that Gulf. In a blink of an eye, you know. There's so many ways we can fuck these guys up. Just concentrate on that and smile, you know. And like the president said, 50 of them for one of each hostages. That hits them in the balls, man, because that's how they think.
No. Let me tell you, that
they're always remembering. Like
when I read that,
I was like,
wow. I don't know whose idea that was for him to say that, but because again, what do they do? Certain numbers mean things to them, right? Certain days mean things to them. And we're always, you know, we're always on a different alert on the different day because, you know, on October 23rd, right, when you're over there, you're mindful of it. Hey, this is the anniversary.
Yeah.
Right? So
I'll tell you when exactly right. I remember when I have my best friends who are out of the Marine Corps, guys who maybe did one tour, right, when I was enlisted. General Neller was getting grilled by Christian Gillibrand and them about the, you know, that stupid social media,
right,
thing that was going on. Right. Don't you think this is the worst day for the Marines? Every Mike Etor, Ken Kirkaby, they're calling me going, I think fucking October 23rd is a pretty bad fucking day. You know, they're pissed off. And right, that's, you know, I remember October 23rd. I remember September 11th. I remember all those guys who got kidnapped. Remember Colonel Higgins?
Yep.
Remember, and yep. Timmy mentioned William Buckley. William right. Buckley, the guy that tortured to death.
Right.
These motherfuckers have been kicking us in the ball since 1979. That's over with. We're gonna kick back, you know.
Okay, so now that you've had that little therapy session, General, what would be at the top of your target list? I saw somebody say, and I don't know who it was, say the other day, we should destroy their oil production capability like they tried to do the Saudis. We could do
that's
that.
That's a very good first step.
And that would that would I'm the economic advisor right now. I'm multi-hatting this OPT. But if everything we do is either focused on their economy, and in particular short-term cash flow, and the IRGC ability to control, whether it's be command and control assets or so communication nodes and whatnot, and then we blind them, those would be at the top of my list because that would hit them economically, which then maybe promotes regime change. Timmy, over to you. Who are you?
Oh,
nobody needs you to do fucking analysis yet. We'll give you a chance to do that. Make a suggestion. What do we do?
Secretary of War. Mr. President, we are still processing the JPEL, which we started with the militia. We've got 10 more targets to hit. I say we service the targets.
All right. Hey, big shot. Tell everybody what JPEL is since I want to speak in code.
I'm sorry. It's a joint priority effects list. It's basically your top 10 scumbags you want to take off the board. And it's once you're nominated to JPEL, it's not good odds you're going to make it. There's only a couple that have survived, you know, the Al-Zakari and one other. But other than that, everybody gets taken out. It's pretty ruthless. Those guys are pretty good.
Okay, so what is your recommendation? Look, we're looking for national courses of action, not individual.
No. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying we'll continue to process the JPEL, which looks to me like they're going through the series, and then we'll assess and see where we want to start attacking next. And if there's nothing to attack,
I'm asking you for a recommendation.
Recommendation. I'm saying
we're already fucking doing that. Do you want to get fired tonight?
No. I'm saying we finish the JPEL. If there's nothing left to do, we'll come home. How's that?
Right.
No, shit.
You're fired. You're fucking fired.
No.
Come on. We're doing that already. We're prosecuting.
No. I'm saying once they're done, they can come home if and unless Iraq is like begging us to leave them there. Prosecute the JPEL and get out of there. What the hell else we got to stay for? I'm not saying everybody. I'm talking the Joint Special Task Force.
Okay.
Take them out. Leave the advisors.
Let me refocus you. Okay, we're looking for national courses of action relative to Iran and Iraq.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Mr. President, my recommendation would be to send John Kerry to Iran, absolutely, and to continue supporting the government in Iraq as long as they will have us, and they're going to need us. So I absolutely recommend we maintain our small footprint in Iraq and keep the pressure on the Shia militias. Because really, it's Iran's move. We could not be in a better position. I'm sorry, I'm editorializing.
You are. I still don't have a good course of action.
My course of action is to go firm and stay. Finish prosecuting our targets and wait to see what happens next because we don't know. Maybe it will be a good time for us to go home after that. I doubt it. But we have to see what
Mr.
happens.
President, I recommend we give them the same package we gave the Ukrainian. a shitload of anti-tank weapons and everything else. I'm saying.
Yeah, what do we call that thing? The javelin.
Javelin. Yeah.
That's a good piece of gear, man. The Russians, that raised their eyebrows. Essentially, we're going to hold Iran responsible for anything that happens, any loss, any coincidental. So we're essentially going to adopt the Vito Corleone warning.
Yeah.
Anything that happens, we're going to hold you responsible.
The next high school shooting, they lose a city.
Yeah. Or at least they're every ship in their Navy that's in the water.
I mean, that's getting ridiculous. But, I mean, you know. Yeah, I think it should be more focused on what kind of hurt we're going to do to them in response than it is trying to make we all know you can't defend everywhere effectively.
There's been much consternation about that will escalate things and will lead to a war. And so how should we, what do we explain to the American people about war with Iran? We don't my opinion, it's not going to be much of a war. And we don't want, we're not, we would never even go in. We would just annihilate what they have. I mean, there's no reason for us to land any troops in great numbers there other than maybe to make the Iranian, the RGC mass so we could annihilate it. That would be the only purpose of a ground force as something that they would have to, you know, mass to confront. But a
COAWS Kashim Island thing, exactly.
Right. A war against Iran is not something that we're afraid of. Should we articulate that to the American people? Would that scare the shit out of them too much? I already read articles about the draft is coming back, and that's not making anybody happy. So how do we articulate this to the American people? What do we communicate?
God forbid these people have to – God forbid they might have to pony up for the country. But you're right.
The thing to do is say,
hey, look, we don't want a war, but if it comes, we can win it. We're not going to try and change Iran into some kind of broke dick version of like South Bend, Indiana, which already is broke dick. You know, we're not going to do any regime. We're not going to do any nation building. We're just going to kick their fucking ass so they stop fucking with them.
I think
President Trump's pretty good at articulating that tweet by tweet.
Well said, NSA.
Yeah. That's how you keep your job in this administration.
All right, Timmy.
What do you think, NSA? I'll think whatever you want me to think, sir.
I don't think that's the way to go. I think the only way out for Iran is to draw us into some kind of conflict.
Where did we get to that?
The U.S. stuff.
Yeah, what the fuck?
Oh, shit. Never mind. Mr. President, I tell the American people not to worry about a war. We are not going to be drawn into any large-scale conflict into that area. If we're tested, we will respond appropriately with standoff weapons.
Right.
There's no reason to get the American people worried about a war on the land.
We would not seek a battle as we are, but as we are, we will not run from it.
There you go.
Well said.
That's exactly what I tell him.
Well said, NSA.
Henry the Fifth.
Can I ask both of you as advisors, why would we only respond in a proportionate way? The Israelis.
Do not do proportionate. Leads to more.
Israelis seem not to have an issue with disproportional response, and I think that their military is respected for that, or maybe feared, or maybe some combination of the two. Give me your thoughts on this whole thing that I've seen all over the news all weekend about our response was disproportionate. Should I worry about proportion? Yeah. NSA?
Instead of killing... No, you shouldn't. What we did was that was a masterstroke killing that general, because they want us to kill Lance Corporal, you know, Soleimani, instead of, you know, Major General Soleimani, because there's a million of them. It doesn't hurt anybody. But this is the guy who makes decisions, and now he's had to finally pay for his decision instead of some guy who got drafted out of Bandar Abbas or something, and poor schmuck just gets killed. You know, doesn't even know why. And the only way proportionality, the only way things get stopped is disproportionality. You want to stop something, you do it way more, way more than the offense happened. We're not talking about law and justice within our country. We're talking about malign acts. How you stop them from doing malign acts? You hit them so bad that their ass is bleeding for two centuries.
Ooh. You know, the Persians were crippled at the Battle of Salamanca because when all those ships carrying all those noblemen went to the bottom, all the treasure that the noblemen had went to the bottom with them because they couldn't leave it back home because it wasn't a safe place to leave money. Not a trust-based society, if you know what I mean.
Right.
Yeah, but this proportionality thing, I was not saying a proportional response because we don't fight fairly. We always try to have overwhelming odds in our favor. So when I'm saying we're responding from afar using standoff weapons, I wasn't saying pinprick attacks. I was talking about a comprehensive campaign servicing a series of targets. And it's exciting to even think about, Mr. President. I'm getting a little bit excited here. Thank you.
We'll try to rein yourself in. So
yeah, I'm better now. I'm better now.
So this whole conversation about proportionality – In both your opinions, you seem to be saying that, that proportionality is what fuels this, that they're not afraid, and that their whole their whole proxy system of war has us whacking some dude in Somalia for the coal bombing when we should have whacked somebody in Iran?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, the coal bombing, that's...
That was Al-Qaeda.
Yeah, I'm mixing my terrorists.
Yeah, that was Al-Qaeda.
Yeah, right.
But as we've said several times, we've been saying for days now, we finally hit them directly back, and it felt good. That's a long time coming.
Although we did that wrong. That's one lesson of the whole 9/11 call thing, is we went after the wrong people. Right. I think we all agree on that.
So are we confident that they will not attempt to kill Americans in large numbers?
No. There's always a fuck up. They don't have monolithic control over all their resources.
Hey! Look, didn't those
somebody
guys
may do it?
Those guys grab a bunch of Americans? They pulled up in black SUVs. When the hell was this? 2014 or 15 or something? Soleimani, the Iranians, they killed one, grabbed four, killed them, were going to hold them as hostages and killed them, but they pulled up in American uniforms. Guys remember this?
No, I don't.
Yeah. Oh, hold on a second.
I know there's a big cruise ship somewhere full of Americans.
At the risk of cutting you, both of you off, but I thought you both said earlier that if they... And play the Vito Corleone audio again. If anything like that happens, we know where it came from. We will not disassociate the actions from Iran, from the Iranian Republic. We will not go after the proxies.
Right.
It's easier for them to get a hold of those yahoos than it is for us. Absolutely right.
Yeah. No, as a matter of fact, I'm reading
this
2007.
They pay for
anything. Anyway, 2007 is when they...
Since 9/11, I can't go to the mall. I look at these cruise ships. I think about all the vulnerabilities, innocent people. You know, and you go nuts, defend everybody everywhere. You got to strike the guys who would strike.
All right.
Well, I was going back in time only to reference the capabilities that they had to do those kind of things. That was my whole point of putting it out. But I don't think that doing those kind of things will do them any good in this current situation. I think they've got to provoke an unreasonable response from us and take it to the world court, because the world don't like Trump that much. They sure as hell don't like us that much. I mean, even though we're such nice and pleasant people. I don't understand what their problem is. But the Iranians have the capability to do that kind of shit. I just don't see where it's going to get them anything. Yeah, it was... 2007 was when the Iranians kidnapped a bunch of American servicemen.
Right. Yeah. All right. Yep. All right. So at the end of these three OPTs, I think where we have everybody is Iran's got a very, walks a tightrope, right, relative to their courses of action in trying to look strong. Yet, the 52 targets that are already teed up, as President Trump said, along with the Vito Corleone audio, that puts them in a very, very difficult spot, especially relative to the struggles they've already had. I don't know that since 1970, whatever, I don't know if I've ever seen the Iranian, this regime, in this kind of trouble.
Predicament.
Yeah, because they are in a predicament. The Iraqis are in a similar predicament in that there is, the Iranians have shored them up, have helped them maintain control over their country by sending them trained Iranian soldiers and militia. And if they won't do our bidding now, then if they won't do the bidding of Iran now, then Iraqi politicians have a problem, and there's going to be a confrontation. And I would expect you to see Shiite on Shiite violence. That's what Right, right. That's what we're talking about. It's Shiite militia against Iraqi militia, Shiite militia against Iranian-led Shiite militia.
That's going to be ugly.
Yeah, the Iranians are definitely overextended.
Right. And do we see, and we don't see Iraq after the dust settles telling the United States to get the fuck out, because that would precipitate a civil war.
They got to be careful, because we might just do it, and then they're
right.
fucked.
Right. And articulate why they're fucked, Jeff.
Well, because then they're totally dominated by the juggernaut of Iran. Iran with the huge population. Iran that's already in their country in every province in big numbers. You know, there'd be no recourse for them.
All right. And so they either – so there is no Iraq if the United States leaves. And then, in my opinion, then we have to deal with the Sunni thing. And there's just – the United States leaving enables the Iranians and it enables the Sunni. We don't.
The irony of it is, yeah. The irony is,
isn't that crazy?
Is that the thing that could bring the three main groups in Iraq together is the threat of Iran finally, because all of them, the Kurds, the Sunnis, and the Iraqi Shias, don't like Iran telling them what's what.
Nope. So, if we could come to some kind of revenue sharing agreement on oil money. And then we'd all agree to fight Iran, just like in the old days.
Well, they could, yeah. Well, the good old days when they had Saddam, they're all united
right.
then.
Right, that's
in
what
terror.
I mean. That's what I mean. In the good old days, when Saddam was
maybe there. This time it'd be a little bit more healthy, not terror.
Well, I mean, so you look at. I mean, we need the United States because we use the United States to keep Iran at bay, and if we tell the United States to go away, then we have Iran kicking in the front door and saying, okay, we spent all the money. We own this thing now. Much like the drug cartels in Mexico. Hey, we paid for it. We own it. And do our shit now. And we don't want that. We wish the Iranians would draw down like the Americans have and we could manage them in a certain way. But they're not there yet. And, you know, maybe if the Americans put them back in their can a little bit, maybe that'll be good for us. And so, which is interesting, right? That the Iraqis ultimately would be rooting for the Americans to put the Iranians back in their can. So,
meanwhile, President Trump's in the White House going, "This goddamn Iraq, it's like a snot you get on your finger. You try and flick it off, it just got on your other finger. You know? I can't get rid of it."
Hey, you know what though? I'm reading this book called The Good Soldiers. It's about a battalion in Sadr City in the middle of the surge, and they're getting right. their asses chewed right. up, you know. And as you and we're sitting here having this conversation about Iraq needing us, and visualizing being in a stable-ish Iraq in the future, it just seems to me that maybe all our sacrifices weren't in vain after all. Who knows? We'll have to see how this turns out. That would be a goddamn pleasant surprise for once, wouldn't it?
Hell yeah.
Well,
even if it wasn't true, I would embrace that.
that's a good point.
Good for you, Tim.
I was talking to somebody recently, and they were asking me about Iraq and Afghanistan and the experience. I said, well, I have to tell you that intellectually it's fascinating. You see a different culture. You see all the things that contribute to that culture. You see what they value, how the economy works, and you see, you know, how a strong man rules. And in the midst of that, right, you're trying to change their government. You're trying to change their country. And I said, so, you know, intellectually, it's fascinating to watch. And he looked at me and said, I've never heard anybody say that. And I said, well, I mean, if you talk to my friends, you know, they would tell you that, I mean, the problems are huge, right? And they're fueled by all these competing forces, like in any country. And so going there and to cultures that are so different from ours and seeing that, you know, again, I remember in Iraq, they kept asking, but what do you want? Because nobody would come here and do this and then just leave and turn it over to us. What do you want? Do you want to own part of the country for eternity? Is that what you want? No, we don't. We'll go home at some point. You know, maybe we'd like to be out at Al-Assad. And they're like, Al-Assad, you can have all of Al-Assad right now. Is that what you want? Yeah. You know, take it and go, you know, go out there. But not yet, because we still need you here. So, you know, to me, these issues, you know, are fascinating. But again, I think the thing that concerns me the most are some of the things I read from Americans who are so, in my opinion, disassociated with real events on the ground, you know, that have happened historically, right? The real relationship between the United States and Iran, as opposed to this fictitious thing. It's almost like the way Putin, you know, preens around the world as the world Dr. Evil. Yeah. And you're like, yeah, Russia really isn't all that anymore. But yet he's allowed to be. And to me, like, it's like Iran getting its pants pulled down. You talked all this shit, okay? Now, boom, here you go.
Hey. Sure did, right up to the day before.
Right.
And you're right about the being in Iraq or Afghanistan. I mean, it's like, I never had a boring day five tours there.
Right.
Now I have nothing but boring days. Every day is a fucking boring day. Except for when I got a root canal. And then I'd rather be boring. You know?
You know, in 2001, when we went into Afghanistan, we had an emergency. We had some kind of FARPer set up in Iranian territory. The Iranians let us use some of their land to launch that invasion. We had an agreement because we were so pissed off.
They were a little nervous about us. Yeah.
Yeah. We were so fucking pissed off after 9/11. Everybody else in the world was terrified of what we were going to do. And when we said, hey, Iran, we want to use some space for an air base, they're like, sure, great, Satan, go ahead. So it seems like we might be a little bit on the pissed off side again. And I'm really enjoying it. I mean, I got to tell you, in a measured way, a measured to discipline pissed off, I sense a strategic campaign that's being executed with precision.
Oh my God.
And I don't know who's doing it.
Here we go.
I don't know who's doing it. Maybe all it's right. Just a coincidence. Yes. You know, Droney McDrone face and all.
Yeah. There you go. The Tim Lynch conspiracy theory. I just don't. It's not in his repertoire.
Somebody's doing something.
Strategy.
Somebody.
Well, I mean, I think that this is Mike McNamara's opinion. Right, these things came together that we had intel on where this guy was going to be, and we knew about the plan, and that target package got presented to the president. And when you look at the things under this dude, you look at what he's planning, then I think it's a pretty easy call to whack that guy. Right?
No question.
Absolutely.
No question.
Right. And now the question is, will it be linked to any greater thing? I think that's a good question. I don't think.
I'm talking about the prior things. Maybe these are all coincidences. I'm going back to that goddamn drone getting shot down.
Oh my God.
I'm telling you, it's just coincidence.
It's what happens when you drink the water and live on base your whole life, folks. You're listening to it right there. What do they call that?
So that's the problem.
What are those things? PBAs? PBSs? Something like that?
They got a pill for it. I'm fine.
That
now.
Base Thank water you. We've been drinking.
Exactly. Timmy drinking tap water on base for his whole life, and now you get to listen to it.
What Timmy wants is before he dies to see the United States execute at the strategic
that's
level.
That's the problem with the presidents. Is
that's
no matter which president it is, Timmy's talking. Okay.
Yeah. Well, who told you?
No. I was just saying I was hoping – I hope to see a strategic campaign launched by the United States that's successful in my lifetime. I think I'm seeing one now, but maybe I'm not.
I think you're being delusional because we don't do strategy. I mean, I agree with you. I mean, I think that's it's the most
– There's never any break.
It's the most
every president inherits what the guy behind him left. Wasn't really his fault because he inherited from the guy before him.
Yeah, but again,
not that they're blameless. They still managed to fuck up, but you know.
Yeah, but I mean, come on, I mean, well, and that's why. And Mike Marletto told me he didn't agree with me, but I said the people that initiate the initial course of action and point, you know, this juggernaut, and it's more than a juggernaut because once you point the kinetic energy of the United States in a direction, that's like, you know, that's like 100 aircraft carriers, you know, going in one direction. That have all been combined into one ship, and now we're going to turn the son of a bitch. And so everybody else behind it does not have the, you know, does not have the left and right steering that the initial, you know, people do. And then once you're committed, then it's all this, well, if we leave now, you know, what about the blood we've shed? What about this? What about the country? And the Colin Powell Pottery Barn School of Diplomacy and whatnot.
You know, it's like, it's not just that. All facets of U.S. government are awesome when they're directed at the individual. They're awesomely frightening.
Oh.
Grind you to dust.
Yeah.
I mean, the Justice Department, you know, the Defense Department, all of them. They're just tremendous power there.
Well, and so to me, I do want to grade out, like, the chairmen of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the Secretaries of Defense, you know, under the guise of what did they know, you know, and then what did they do? Because, you know, there's people who had, so let me ask you this, who was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff from 2001 to 2005?
Shit. I want to say Wheeler, but I know that's wrong.
That's 2001
when? 2001 to 2005. Yep. October of 2001 to...
That was that guy, they brought him...
No.
No, Shinseki got...
He was brought out of retirement. No, Shinseki was before that, right?
Yeah, no, he wasn't. He was the chair. He was the Army Chief of Staff that got told to retire early after he pissed off Rumsfeld.
Yeah.
Right. Here's my point.
My point in asking that is that the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff during that period of time allowed the nation to go to war in Iraq and Afghanistan first and then Iraq. With phase four not articulated. That's a mortal sin, in my opinion. You know? And it's, you know, his name, I believe, is Richard Myers, Air Force guy.
That's right, big, tall guy.
I remember him now. But nobody knows that guy's name. Yet that guy, what he allowed to go forward is he committed the sins of Vietnam.
Isn't the corporate ethos of the general officers at the senior level, the idea that if nobody knows my name, I've done my job effectively because I'm just representing, you know, the awesome people behind me? Isn't that their goal?
I don't know.
I just thought because I don't know him. I mean, even when General Dunford was the chief of staff, we kept an eye on him because we know him and we like him. He's a great guy. But yet the average American probably couldn't tell you Joe Dunford was the last.
I know, but we couldn't even tell you who the chairman.
Yeah, that's a good
point. Who the chairman was during that period of time. And to me, that's when the 100 aircraft carriers all consolidated into one gets launched into Afghanistan. That's when it gets launched into Iraq, and without phase four articulated, with Rumsfeld tearing up war plans and doing it on his own, and that guy sits there and what's he say? Sounds good to me. And then the nation is at war. And so, you know, this discussion about the lament about us not being able to do strategy. Well, I mean, fuck that guy, you know, and again, the reason I knew it was because we were having a discussion about who was the chairman in what year. And I can't remember, Jerome Pace's name came up. And I was like,
yeah,
I don't even know, right? Who was it? And I started going backwards and like that guy. And then it's like Richard Myers, big, tall, you know, Air Force dude, right?
Air Force guy.
Yeah. And, you know, and so the nation goes to war twice and neither time, you know, do we really have an end state articulated and nobody says shit and then everybody else now has to recover. Now we're already at war. And so to me, I would assign Myers and who was the guy who went jump the 82nd, the CENTCOM guy, Franks. I would give them Fs. You get F-. Can I give him a G? Is G worse than F? If it is G, then I will give you whatever's the lowest grade I could possibly give you, in my opinion, because you betrayed, you know, the lessons of Vietnam that were paid for with 58,000 American lives and a lot of people like Tim's dad and uncle that came back, you know, who had to live with all that shit. All right. And there were great lessons that came out of that that all got ignored, in my opinion, when we went to war. I'll make one more point. And this is, to me, what is most brutal about guys like Franks and Myers. They grew up in the shadow of Vietnam. Every day of their lives, they worked for guys who were in Vietnam, right? I mean, because they came in the 70s. And it was Vietnam, Vietnam. Their whole life was Vietnam, Vietnam. And they got those lessons shoved up their ass and down their throat, and they had to hear about it their whole fucking career. And then when the wife...
The big villain's Rumsfeld.
Oh, no, I agree.
Not that.
I agree, but those guys enabled the villain. And it was their moral obligation, and they grew up with all that Vietnam shit. And in my opinion, they should have known. That's why they should be graded harsher in spite of somebody's criticism of me.
Every general officer above the rank of brigadier general goes up, you know, for a beauty contest with those guys in the Senate and so forth. And what they got right now, what they had then, Mac, is the Congress wants a bunch of broke dicks, a bunch of fucking weak ass broke dicks. That's what they want, and that's what they got.
I think you've set a world record for the use of the term broke dick in one podcast. I think that's four.
Well, it's...
Congratulations. I think that's a world record.
It's such a good word, broke dick.
Well, I mean...
It's like shit. It's like shit or go blind time. So like
you like that one? But, you know, again, just so everybody knows, to get promoted to the rank of general... You have to go along with the program. You're not an iconoclast, you're not an iconoclastic person, because if you were, you would be off-ramped, right? And so you tend to be able to work within.
Be off-ramped early.
Yeah. You tend to be able to work within the system, and you tend to get along with everybody, right? You tend to be an achiever, no doubt about that. You're probably smart. But at the end of the day, you're probably a conformist. And I believe that 10% of our generals, up to the rank of 4 stars, ought to be shit disturbers. We ought to have some guys in there that like, oh, Kenny, he's the I'm not afraid to lip off in the OPT and he's the one that's going to stand up and tell Don Rumsfeld, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. You're out of your fucking mind to rip up the war plan and write it yourself. Who the fuck do you think you are? We just, General Zinni just wargamed this shit, right, in 1999. And now you're going to tell us that none of it's valid and you're going to, war's changed and you're going to write your own rules?
No, Mac, in his defense, he held the most expensive, Rumsfeld, he held the most expensive war game in history, right, the Millennial Challenge, which I think in 25 minutes, Van Riper, who was a Red Force guy, sunk the entire Navy, and they stopped the exercise. This exercise cost millions. They stopped the exercise and shit-canned Van Riper, told him to get lost. Remember that?
General Van Riper.
And again, so do you need more information to maybe, right, pump the brakes on this motherfucker?
Not after that war game you didn't.
And again, that's what's, you know, to me, that's what, as Jeff said, I mean, you get a bunch of, you know, conformists who are running the American military, and you buy into the whole, we're going to unilaterally rewrite the world and we're going to rewire it. That's not what Americans do. I mean, again, if Saddam Hussein had bombed Pearl Harbor or something like that, you know, I mean, you have to, like, again, I don't have any problem. You know, hammer the shit out of the Iranians. They deserve it. Not the Iranian people. Get after the IRGC and change that fucking, do everything we can do as Americans to change that regime. It's bad. And then say that out front. We're after regime change. Fuck you guys. We've fucked with you since 1979, and we're done with it. We're fucking done with it. Right? And I'm going to say it. I hope I get reelected so I can bust it off in your ass for another 4 fucking years. And I don't have to get reelected after that. So guess what that means? Yeah, I'm going to lay the wood to your ass. But again, I, it's just, you look at this stuff and you know, and all the things we're saying. But, it, you know, Jeff's, I don't know, when we were commiserating a month or so ago, he said, look, if you don't have guys that are of the moral fabric that will stand up, right, and look people in the face and say, hey, fuck you. And Shinseki, in my opinion, is the only one at the four-star level that has done that, that I know of. Now, other guys say they did it, and they all testify. Yeah. Will you speak truth to power? Oh, yes, sir, Senator. Yes, ma'am, Senator. I've made a living of it, and I'm
Right. That's exactly right.
Right. And then
General, I guess General Newbold, too, but, you know.
He's a three-star.
Right?
Yeah, he's a staff guy.
Yeah.
A three-star staff guy. The no, but I mean, no, you're right. Newbold said, I won't do this. And so, anyway, but again, I think that those guys, when I grade everybody out, and that's why I went through, I started going through, like, okay, who do I got to grade? Well, Franks, he's getting an F. Well, who the hell was the chairman? Myers. Like, I don't, how does the world not know that dude's name?
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Yeah.
All right.
You know, that's, yeah, that's a good point.
That's
a very good point. And here's the thing. Any kind of rules you try and put in end up causing more problems than they solve.
Yeah,
in other ways,
you
know.
Complexity.
What it comes down to is you got to have guys who just – people with good judgment, and otherwise there's no way to legislate that. You know what I mean? Or
no, but what I remember about Franks was that he ran on nicotine, he constantly in caffeine, constantly drinking coffee and smoking cigarettes and stuff, because that was what it was portrayed in the press, and that was somehow supposed to be impressive to people. But that's half the problem. Is nobody in Congress or anybody else? None of them can run with those generals. I mean, they're the most respected public figures in America, mostly because Americans don't know them as well as we do. But your average congressperson can't compete with those guys. They're fucking smart.
Yeah,
familiarity.
If you want any kind of validation of what Tim just said, just listen to some of the comments that you've heard since Soleimani got whacked.
From generals.
From general, from politicians. You're just like, oh my.
General Keane's always good.
Did all these people live on bases and drink the water like Timmy did? Like, what the fuck?
No,
they're PBAs. Did they all, like, were they all hanging out with Timmy, drinking the water, with got all those PBAs in their brain, and now this is what we're getting from them?
No. But the thing is there's no – the system's not going to change itself, and there's nothing outside of the system that knows it well enough to change it for them. You see what I'm saying?
No. You lost me.
We replicate the general officers are replicated themselves. The right. General officers are replicated themselves. They're the same kind of company man, but they're also very fit and very smart and have done cool things. They're senators and congressmen. They can't lay a glove on these guys.
Right.
The only way it changes as far as getting a different kind of general officer, I don't know how it does, because it's not going to correct itself.
No, it won't. It won't change. It won't change.
No, it won't.
And so that's why, you know, guys like Tony, to me, Tony Zinni's ultimate, you know, in my opinion, officer. And that,
well, I agree.
And not afraid to stand up and tell the truth in a thing. At the time that people are asking. Now, the criticism of General Zinni was he was no longer in uniform. So that's really not a great litmus test, Matt. And there's some validity to that, because as we've talked about on this program, when we talk about this subject, it's everybody thinks they can always do more from within. If I call bullshit on the president and throw my stars on the table, I get my 15 seconds of fame and then I'm done. I can do more good here. And I guess there, in my opinion, there should be some sense of proportionality. Okay, maybe. But is the country going to war without phase four mapped out? And if that's the case, then you can't come back from that. You've got to quit.
You never have. You can't point to a success, though, Mac, where we had phase four mapped out, you know, ever.
And unfortunately, we didn't get our butts kicked like in Vietnam, which forced some change in on the system. That's the other damn unfortunate part of us.
Yeah. Well, okay, let's talk about that. Let's talk about Phase 4, World War II. Phase 4 was unconditional surrender for Germany and Japan.
Correct.
Okay, and then initially we had to get off the canvas, and so really Phase 4 wasn't significant. How about Phase 4 for Korea? First, we're trying not to get driven into the sea, into the Pacific Ocean by the North Koreans at the Pusan perimeter and whatnot. And then we do the Incheon landing. And did we have Phase 4 articulated that somehow or other that we were going to eject them from the peninsula? And then Phase 4, you know, evolved into a stalemate along the 38th parallel.
Well, you had a diva in charge. You had a military no-shit diva in charge who had no intention of listening to anything Washington had to say in MacArthur. But MacArthur's
okay, we're talking about Phase 4 now. Did we have Phase 4 articulated, or was it a...
I think Jeff lost Jeff. I think the answer is obviously no. We did not have anything like that.
No, we have...
And he's back. Jeff Kenney rejoins the program. All right, final comments on I don't care on this on Stewart's ride around McClellan that we've reenacted tonight in this far ranging discussion about any one of the three OPTs we've had about strategy, about general officer selection. Jeff, final comment.
Only is, and I hate to say, but. There's no rule that can result in good general. You need divine intervention. You need God on your side. I can't. If we didn't have President, who gave us James Webb, gave General General Gray, who was perfect successor to Barrow and could have gone the other way.
That's a great point because Gray was never ever thought to be anywhere close because he was too outspoken, right? He was too brash, right? He wasn't commandant material. We need somebody a little bit more polished than Al Gray.
And
right,
he's like that talking about Matt.
Right, and look what he did for the Marine Corps. You know, from post World War II, General Gray, up there with you could argue about General Barrow, and in terms of significance, but I mean that's a pretty short list that General Gray is going to be on. Relative to, and he should have never, again, without the first Marine ever to be the commandant, the Secretary of the Navy, that shit would have never happened. That shit would have never happened. All right, Timmy, any final thoughts on anything we talked about tonight?
No, I enjoyed doing this so much. I just got to tell you guys, I love this. And I think we've articulated some stuff that you're not going to read in any damn news anywhere, which is refreshing.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting. It will be really interesting for everybody that listens to this to watch what Iran does and what Iraq does, knowing the difficult position that both those nations are on and are in. And then also we'll see if the President of the United States is serious about, the Vito Corleone. I don't believe in coincidences, right? If Michael winds up dead, right, because a canary flew into his ear, I'm going to hold somebody in here responsible. So to me, both those countries are, and to me, Iraq's position of their national government is really precarious because they are caught in this fight between the two people that have propped them up. Now, the two people that propped him up are preparing to go bare knuckles, although that will never happen because one of the parties can't do that. And so, but they're dancing, they're preening around to do that. So I think this is a fascinating study in international relations and to see you know, as Jeff has always articulated, right? This Persian thing butted up against this Arab thing, right? With the United States embroiled in it. How will it sort itself out? And it will have long-reaching implications for Iran and for the Middle East. So I think it's going to be fascinating to see how the Iraqi government, you know, navigates this thing. After all is said and done and all the public proclamations they make, but watch what they do, not what the fuck they say. And I think that's going to be fascinating. So anyway, boys, I appreciate all your time tonight. And have a great day.
Hey, thank you, Mac. You too, Ben.
All right. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.